I'm the sinister, Mr. Kiss, my ass is just a renegade. Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a renegade. Never been afraid to talk about anything,
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 anything.
Renegade.
Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a renegade.
Welcome to the Tea Podcast, the podcast about anything and everything from the perspective of one man, and that man is me, T. from good old Boston, Massachusetts. What's up, everyone? It is Thursday, January 31st, 2019. It's the end of January. Can you believe it? Can you believe that it's almost February? That's what everybody's going to be saying. Oh my God, it's almost February. Holy shit. It's the Super Bowl. It's fucking Groundhog Day. It's the shortest month of the year. Let's get fucking wild. Let's get silly. Let's fucking throw snow at each other. Let's rub fucking icicles on our fucking nipples. That's what people do in February. Anyway, I'm closing out January with a whole bunch of shit that I watched. It's not going to be my, like, tea reviews in 15. I'm just going to go on a fucking little tangent here. I watched a whole bunch of Netflix and shitty TV shows about 2 weeks ago when I was home. Most of that week, I was floored for about 3 straight days with a bad cough, sore throat, and a fever. And then I tried to go back into the office, and they sent me home another 2 more days, so I just went through a whole bunch of Netflix shit, and then I just somehow, I don't know why, I went over to MTV and just started watching shitty reality shows. So I'm going to give you my take on some stuff. So a lot of people love to, you know, get on Netflix and get their reviews, or we live in a world now, it's like, oh my God, you don't watch Peaky Blinders? Oh my God, you don't watch Black Mirror? Oh, it's the best show ever. Everything's the best show ever. Everything's, oh my God, why don't you watch it? Like, I do that with Game of Thrones, and believe me, anytime I said to someone, oh, you need to watch Game of Thrones, or what the fuck is your problem, you don't watch Game of Thrones, and then they finally sit down, I say 2 things. I say, you got to watch Game of Thrones. It's the best show since The Sopranos. It is. It's right up there. But you got to get by the first 3 episodes. That's what I tell everyone. Why 3? Well, I kind of give the 3 number for every show, but more so for Game of Thrones, because the first 3 episodes have to introduce all the characters, all the storylines, all the A story, the B story, the C, the D, the E, the F, all that shit. And then you get all these characters, and you get to know them, and you get to love them, or you get to hate them, and they're going to die. That's what happens in Game of Thrones. They have no problem killing people off. So my recommendations are usually pretty solid. So whether something's good or something bad, something sucks, that's one of my abilities. That I know movies, I know TV shows, I'm very opinionated. I love them, I watch them, I enjoy them, I can write them. It's just a big part of who I am. It's in my fucking DNA. So I'm going to share with all of you some of the hottest stuff that's been going on TV, because that's all I did. Was sit on my ass. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't work out. I wasn't even eating. I threw all my prep meals away. I drank water and protein shakes. I just played with my fucking cat. I passed out, woke back up, watched more fucking TV. I didn't know if it was daytime, nighttime. I don't know if I was coming or fucking going. I didn't shower. I fucking stunk. It was gross. But I watched a lot of TV. And here's what I watched. Let's start off with some of the highlights. Now, I started 2 shows during the holidays. I just had a lot going on. I didn't get to finish them, but I finished them while I was homesick. That is two shows that everybody always talks about when it comes to Netflix. And I've been wanting to watch them for years. And I finally did. And you know what? The recommendations everybody gave me telling me these are 2 of the best shows ever, they were pretty dead on with these. Like, these were accurate. And those 2 shows are Ozark and Peaky Blinders. Now, I'll go to Ozark first because I started and completed that first. Ozark had the 2 seasons. And Jason Bateman... You know, I grew up with him in the 80s and the late 90s. He started doing, like, comedy. I know him as a comedic person, as somebody who just does comedy. He's funny. I didn't know he could be a serious actor, let alone direct a lot of episodes of Ozark. And that whole cast, the wife, the kids, the damn hillbillies, the drug dealers, the preachers, everybody they introduce in that show, whether they stay alive or they kill them or whatever, they are great characters because they are performed and portrayed on screen by phenomenal actors and actresses. Ozark is a great fucking show. And it is about a guy who, you know, it's an investment. It's what he does. He's an accountant, and he gets caught up with his buddy, his partner first. And I'm not, again, unlike my Teen 15, I'm not going to give any spoilers away. I'm trying to give you the generic storyline and what it is, and here's like my pitch to you. And he's hustling and laundering money for a Mexican drug cartel. And that gets him in all types of shit, where he ends up in the Ozark just to keep some longevity going, so he comes up with a plan to find a way to launder the money to get it back to the drug dealer. He does that, and after he does that, the drug dealer, the cartel, wants him to launder even more money. So it starts off at $8 million, he launders that, cleans it, washes the money, then turns out he wants him to do another $50 million. And he has to find ways to wash that money, flip it over, put it in legit businesses, clean it, and stay alive when he gets caught up in the hillbilly drug dealers that do, you know, opium, poppy seeds. He gets involved with other people, these other hillbillies and the strip club and this murderous family, the robbers, like everything he turns into, and he finds a way out of it. It's good. Jason Bateman is great, and he doesn't just carry the show. He is the show, but his whole cast of characters is phenomenal. His media family. So it's a media family with him. Kind of uses that dynamic of Tony Soprano, where he did all this illegal mob shit, but he still had to juggle his family life. That's kind of the basis of Jason Bateman's character, and he does that with his family really well. So Ozark, great show. Can't wait for the next season. Highly recommend it. What I recommend even more, again, you're talking about a guy who came from that Sopranos, The Shield, Sons of Anarchy in its prime. The last two seasons sucked. Mad Men and Black Seals, which is a mix of both reality and fake pirates, where the stars, the main character is an anti-hero. Like, the anti-hero is something I always relate to. I think that's a new formula that started with Tony Soprano and carried its way through, like, Vic Mackey and The Shield. That's same with Tommy Shelby in Peaky Blinders. Peaky Blinders is about the Shelby family in England during, like, the turn of the century. It's, like, the 1919 it starts, the last season that I completed, season four. I think each one's six episodes. I did 24 episodes. It ended up being, like, 1925. So it's in England. They come from poverty. They back bets. They fix horse races from the streets. And by the time that fourth season ended, Tom, without giving things away, Tommy and the rest of his, the Shelby crew, the Peaky Blinders, like the Shelbys are three brothers, and then their little group, including them, is the Peaky Blinders. They wear these scally caps, those Irish scally caps. They put razors on the tip. When they fight, they cut people open with the razors. They always find a way out. Tommy always finds a solve, well, like Jason Bateman's character in Ozark, well, like Tony Soprano. Tommy Shelby's probably one of the greatest television characters ever created, in my opinion. And the Peaky Blinders is just that. They are the street hustlers who find a way to make money, and they grow and they come into a lot of money, and people die left and right. Any situation that Tommy and the team, Tommy and his crew get into, he finds a way out, but there's always casualties. Tommy himself is kind of heartless, doesn't really get attached to anyone. He loves his family, but doesn't really show a lot of emotion, and Tommy just thinks like that. He's very systematic into his approach to everything. But Peaky Blinders is a phenomenal fucking show. They just wrapped season five. I think it has to go out to the BBC first, then make its way to Netflix. I'm hoping by the summertime. I cannot wait for season five. I'm putting Peaky Blinders right up there as one of my top all-time favorite shows. I highly recommend it. Next up, and I just started this because I talked about season one, is Punisher. I love Punisher season one. I had a beef with Netflix not too long ago because of the whole Disney thing. They canceled all the Disney shows. They canceled Iron Fist, which sucked anyway. Luke Cage started good, got bad. They canceled that. The Defenders, and unfortunately Daredevil, which was one of my favorite shows, one of my favorite comic book shows. Punisher season one was phenomenal. I love the way that show is portrayed by Shane from The Walking Dead. I'm always going to call him Shane. That's his name. I even forget his real life fucking name. But the Punisher is the Punisher. Frank Castle, the guy that portrays him, is phenomenal. There's a lot of blood. Shoots up all the people that, you know, killed his family, goes off for revenge. He's a comic book character without any superpowers. So season two, I just started. I'm four episodes in. There's 13 episodes. I'm thinking if you're going to jump on the comic book shows, do it now, because I'm assuming they're going to cancel this show, even though it's good, because they're canceling all the Marvel shows. Punisher season two will probably be the last one. Then Jessica Jones, whenever season three sees the light of day, they'll probably cancel that too. But Punisher season two, four episodes in, Frank Castle's picking up where he left off, killing a bunch of motherfuckers. In every episode, he kills about at least 12 people in the first four episodes. I mean, each, not 12 in total. Like, he's killing like a dozen people every episode so far. I recommend Punisher. Watch season one. If you get through it, you like guns, you like people getting shot up, you like bloody fucking fist fights, that's the show for you. Continue with season two. I got nine more episodes to go. So I recommend Punisher. Now, as far as shows go on Netflix, that's what I watched. That's what I got done with. And then I moved over to a bunch of documentaries. Now, during the past couple weeks, two documentaries came out at the same time. One came on Hulu. One came on Netflix. And that was the Fyre Festival documentary. The Fyre Festival was something that was put on by this guy named Billy McFarland and Ja Rule, the rapper. They were trying to take, and again, I'm going to knock the millennials, all these idiot fucking millennials and who are influenced by these influencers on social media, Instagram, all these models, all IG famous, they're actually not really fucking models, all these people out there that have all these followers, and they're going to take that and use the social media formula of like Instagram to put posts up there. And the posts were going to be them shooting the beginning of this festival. And it was Ja Rule, Billy, all these models, they're on yachts and boats, and they were on the Bahamas. Turns out, Billy said at the time he had bought it, but it turned out he didn't, was Pablo Escobar's, one of his islands of the Bahamas. The family allowed him to use it as long as he didn't mention that it was Pablo Escobar's island. And of course, in the very first Instagram post that he put up, he mentioned Pablo Escobar, and they booted him off. Billy ended up moving to like 3 or 4 different islands, to the point where he landed on the end of an island, it was like a peninsula, where he photoshopped the back end off to make it look like it was his own floating island. So that was a blatant fucking lie. And he promised all these performers would be there. Blink 182, and they were going to build a soundstage. And if you paid X amount of dollars, thousands of dollars, you'd fly down in this luxury plane, be on luxury yachts. You could get a mansion. Or it depends if you didn't have that type of budget. You could get this high-end luxury tent. You get all these meals while this festival went on. So it was more like Burning Man meets any one of those stupid fucking Coachella type of shit festivals that you see on Instagram. But all these models from Instagram are supposed to be there. So the filming of the festival commercials and the Instagram post was more luxurious than anything that actually came to be. A lot of you probably heard about this. Well, I remember this when it came out back in 2017. Everybody be on Instagram and Twitter saying, what the fuck is going on? We landed here. There are no planes. There aren't enough tents. They're all wet. It rained. I don't have a place to stay. My luggage isn't here. People putting up pictures of cheese sandwiches. Where's the luxury meals I was supposed to get? They were getting locked into the airport of the Bahamas, and they couldn't make their way back. Billy, up until that day of, kept on telling people he needed more money. He got all these investors. He kept on saying the stage is going to be built. All these performers that were starting to back out were going to be there. All these models and actresses were getting paid $250,000 to post on Instagram saying how great it was going to be. People, Kendall Jenner got it. She got $250,000 a post, and when people started arriving, none of it came to be. And it turned out, Billy ended up embezzling $27.5 million out of all these people. He fucked them over for the Fyre Festival. Now, I didn't see the Hulu one. This was the Netflix one. And to me, as much as it sucks for people, because the people in the Bahamas, they got fucked money, and there was some GoFundMe's going on right now to get their money back, which is good. I had no problem with Billy fucking people over, because they kind of deserved it. If you're listening, this kid was a straight fucking dork. If he was able to raise money and he hustled you to invest into that bullshit festival, you absolutely deserve to lose your fucking money. I don't know how Ja Rule didn't end up fucking getting indicted too. This kid's looking at 30 fucking years. And any dumb millennial with a rich fucking parent that paid these little rich fucks to fly down and spend thousands of dollars to fly to the Bahamas to see Ja Rule and fucking Blink 182, and then you ended up not staying in luxury resorts and you end up getting beat, you fucking deserved it. Because these kids paid to go down there just to be cool. They wanted to go down there, see this fucking festival, and they were going to tweet and post, Instagram post, of how cool the festival was, the food they were eating, the chartered planes they were on, the beautiful island. They were paying just to be fucking cool, and you know what? It backfired. So I got no fucking problem. I'm not shedding a single tear for these fucking millennials that just got beat thousands of dollars for going down there because they wanted to pay to be fucking cool. That's who you get. Billy absolutely should be doing time. In the meantime, while this is going on, they cut to like the last 15 minutes. He had another hustle going on where he was ripping people off in New York City for VIP seats to like the Grammys to meet Jay-Z and Beyonce. And he ended up getting indicted on that. On top of that, he's still running a scam while facing charges for a previous scam. So I expect this kid to go away. But anytime you give money to a fucking hustler and you don't have that hustler instinct already, you deserve to get beat. Like, don't put your money in places where you are not familiar. People are so quick to make fucking money. People are so quick to go on social media and show like they're living a life where they have money. I think it was the perfect burn on both sides. That's what you get. I recommend the Fyre Festival. All types of motherfuckers, rich millennials. This fucking idiot kid is going to go away and all his investors. Ja Rule should go away too, but 50 Cent ruined his whole fucking career, so I guess that was pain enough. The Fyre Festival on Netflix, I highly recommend it. Next up, I watched The American Meme. Now, as you all know, if you go to the T-Podcast Instagram page, or anybody knows in my personal life, I love sending fucking memes. I love a good meme. The more offensive the meme, the better, the funnier, the more I'm going to send it. They actually made a movie with a fat Jewish, that Brittany Furlong chick, who ended up with Tommy Lee, the Slut Whisperer, and a few other folks of a generation now, like millennials, where Instagram is big and how people get money by posts and by likes and how they turn this into like a marketing business now, where like the Fat Jewish, as he got popular, ended up doing his own line of like that White Girl Rosé. He was selling his own alcohol and that became a business for him. He turned it into a hustle. Then it had Paris Hilton on there, who was one of the first celebrities, D-listers that actually use social media to make it popular. It's a really good inside look to the creation of memes, the people that create them, and us as a society of how we're making celebrities of these people that we don't even know just by sharing silly quotes and pictures on like Instagram or Twitter or Tumblr even back in the day. And even get into Vine when Vine was around before they killed it. So the American meme for us, this culture, for the Gen Xers, mostly for the millennials, the Gen Zers that are coming up, the American meme on Netflix, I recommend that as well too. Another documentary I watched, I come, you know, from the 90s and 2000s of all my friends being on fucking steroids. We're all tatted up. Everybody was tanned. Everybody lifted heavy weights. We grew up on protein shakes, reading Flex magazine. I never got into like the high end of bodybuilding, but I put on some size. I was lean. Got a lot of good friends. My best friend, he is into bodybuilding. He's actually going competing to get his pro card. But when we were kids, also my best friend, my cousin and I, we always read Flex magazine. Like Flex Wheeler, Jay Cutler, Lee Priest, because he was a short, jack guy. He kind of stood out for me. We were big into that bodybuilding life. Like, we did supplements. We worked out. We lift heavy. We were all inked up. Again, I never did steroids, but a lot of my friends did. A lot of people I grew up with. That was the lifestyle from my generation growing up in East Boston. And one guy above them all, as big as these guys were, when you saw him on the cover of Flex magazine, was Ronnie Coleman. Ronnie Coleman took the Olympia from what like Schwarzenegger and Lou Ferrigno did back in the day, and he made it his own. He found a way, as massive as these guys were, he was even more massive than them. We followed him because he was also like an Atlanta policeman. He was a cop. He was a regular guy that won the Mr. Olympia 8 times. Like, he was an 8-time champion. And towards the end, his walk-in weight was 300 pounds on stage. Like, when you are a bodybuilder, you cut to go on stage. So like, when your walking weight is off the stage, so his stage weight was 300. His walking weight had to be at least 330, 340. He had to cut that to go on stage. And he was just so fucking massive that nobody could compete with him. Towards the end, when he got too big and got a little more blockier, that's when Jay Cutler kind of took the throne and he became the new Mr. Olympia, and he would win year in and year out. Now, to catch up on that, you get to see all that and all these bodybuilders actually talk during the documentary. It's called Ronnie Coleman the Kink, because it's all about Ronnie Coleman and everybody's take on him. How they're saying, we never seen anybody lift like that before. We lift heavy, but nobody compared to what Ronnie lifted. We were big, but nobody was as big as Ronnie. And it's weird seeing all these guys now who lost all their size. You know, they're in the late 40s, early 50s. But they give tribute to Ronnie Coleman. Then you see Ronnie Coleman after they show all this stuff and people talking. Ronnie Coleman today, because of how heavy he lifted and that lifestyle he lived, they don't get into the steroid part of it, which clearly all were on. But Ronnie Coleman did so much damage to his body, even back then when he really didn't know it. One time he felt something pull in his back, but he just kept on lifting. He did so much damage by lifting that heavy that he had now multiple hip surgeries, multiple knee surgeries, multiple leg, multiple back. He walks with crutches, the kind that wrap around your forearm. He keeps one set upstairs, comes down the stairs, holding onto the rail, doesn't want to use a chair because he thinks he's going to get better. And God willing, hopefully he does. He gets down the stairs, goes to another set. He still works out his upper body, not the size he used to be. But it's just sad to see the guy that was the king of the bodybuilding world, what he did to his body. And he did make one note one time that he felt something in his back, but he just kept on lifting. It turned out he tore one of his vertebrae in his back, and that's where it started. But he still competed and didn't miss the Olympia, I think, 2 more times. And then from there, the damages started coming in. He still makes money. He has his Ronnie Coleman, his RC line of supplements. So he makes a living. He is married. He has kids. But it's just sad to see this current state. So anyone that's into fitness, or even back then, if you're familiar with the bodybuilding lifestyle, especially during the 90s and 2000s, Flex magazine, or even Ronnie Coleman, or even now, if you're not familiar with them, I recommend this documentary. It's called Ronnie Coleman, the King. It's on Netflix. Really good documentary. Now, after Netflix and my shows and the documentaries, I don't know why, but one day I was sick and I decided to go to MTV. Now, I don't like reality shows. I've stated that several times. I did watch The Jersey Shore. I still watch that when it comes on because that was the only one I was relatable to growing up. I knew kids like that. And like again, I just said this, people tatted up, they were tan. So I'll watch The Jersey Shore. Other than that, I don't watch any reality shows. I was home. I was sick. I turned on MTV and I just saw a commercial for some reason for Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club. And it wasn't on TV, so I went on demand and I turned it on. I watched the first two episodes. I watched it because, one, Lindsay Lohan was a train wreck. I remember how hot she used to be. And then all of a sudden, she started getting fucked up on drugs and drinking. She started looking like she was 35 when she was only like 22. Now she looks like she's 55. And so MTV somehow, and you could tell MTV was the front money person. Like, this wasn't Lindsay Lohan's dream as much as on the show she makes it seem like. It wasn't her dream to open up a club in Mykonos. No. I think MTV reached out to her and said, we want you to be the face. We want to put on a reality show. They put up the money and they got the location. Here's the problem. I went to Greece. I went to Athens. I went to Santorini. I love both. I didn't go to Mykonos, but I'm familiar with the island. They kind of like have the same setup. Mykonos is more of the party scene. Santorini is more like the romantic. And then there's Crete, the larger island to go shopping. Mykonos is like Santorini on the coast. It's all white. It's all white, you know, stucco, concrete. That's the way everything's made. Everything's clean. Lindsay Lohan's beach club, it looks like it's in Jersey or could be even California. It has a parking lot. It's backed up. It's clear to me that MTV didn't have the money, the budget. They didn't get your typical on the shore, on the beach Mykonos club. It's a shitty looking fucking club, and they cut away really fucking quick to a beach, back to like a cabana, back to a table, back to like this outside picnic table where the staff is always talking. So that right there made it seem fake to me. The nuts and fucking bolts to this story, it's nuts, pun intended, is Lindsay Lohan. Even though it's fake, she acts like it's her dream. She's trying to act because I think she needs money. That's why she did this. Her coming to the house, they have the staff. They hired all these people that are going to work in the beach club. All these, you think, if you've ever been out in Boston or any place and you know a hostess or a bottle girl or that douchebag guy that works the door, they take all the douchiest people from Vegas and all around in fucking New York and California, and they're going to be the staff of her beach club. And basically, in the beach club, she's over here just like critiquing them and criticizing them. They try to put them through like, you know, you got to entertain this host, or you got to sell 1942 bottles as opposed to champagne. Whoever can make the most, whoever could take care of the VIP guests, whoever knows how to have the most fun but entertain people, but it's still a business, so you really got to be serious. You got to walk that fine line between an industry person and a real career person. And all these fucking kids in their early 20s have ambition, so they're trying to do the right thing, and then they end up fucking up in the club, but then they go back to the house and they hook up and they fuck around and they're all assholes. One's a douchebag, he's disrespectful to women, another girl cries, and Lindsay comes in and talks to them. But to watch Lindsay talk to her partner, this little short gay Greek guy who's hilarious because he's always bent out of shape, those scenes between him and her and those scenes with Lindsay and any one of her staff, watch her face. She's clearly still on fucking pills. Either that or she's bipolar, but I think she's mostly on fucking pills. She goes from having fun at the club of the day to delivering these heartfelt information, and she is looks like a 55-year-old woman who's stoned off her fucking rocker. So I may watch that again. If you like train wrecks, if you want to see where Lindsay Lohan is today, and this fake MTV show, but just see how she interacts, watch Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club. It's one of those things you're not going to be proud that you watch the same way Jersey Shore started, but you'll be entertained. Speaking of Jersey Shore, another show that I watched, just when I thought Jersey Shore, you know, couldn't stereotype Italians. Again, I got no problem with that. I'm not somebody who cries like, oh my God, Jersey Shore makes fun of Italians. We all don't talk like that. We're all not fucking tan, slick back out here. Or like The Sopranos was a stereotypical show. I love The Sopranos. I like Jersey Shore. One show that's even worse than that, these kids are in their early 20s. It's called Made in Staten Island. Now, apparently, there was that show Mob Wives, where one of them was the daughter of Sammy the Bull Gravano. He was the rat that put John Gotti away, and then he ended up going to Federal Witness Protection Program. But when he was out in Arizona doing that, he somehow started shipping mad ecstasy fucking drugs and had to do 20 years anyway. So it's his daughter's daughter, his granddaughter. She's one of the girls. It's her friends in Staten Island. It's this kid, I think it was Christian CP, I think that was his name. He is the main character and all their little friends. You want to slap the shit out of all of them. They all think they're tough guys. They all talk with that fake New York, New Jersey accent. Like here in Boston, the Italians, and we pronounce the I's, like we say Minicotti, right? We say that. They have one guy, like the uncle's going, who got the Minicotti? Where's the Minicotti? Like, we don't drop that. We don't say spaghetti. We say spaghetti. They sound fucking retarded on the show. And these kids all think they're tough guys. They all have pending cases. Even the girls. These little 19, 20, 20-year-old girls have pending cases, supposedly. And it's all from assault. The main star, supposedly, he was at a party where somebody got stabbed, but he was the only one that got arrested. He's looking at 20 years, but saying he didn't do the stabbing. bro, you're only looking at 20 years if you were the one that actually did the stabbing. He's kind of like denying that because for the show, I don't know what's going on. So he has a pending case. One of the girls gets into a fist fight. She has a pending case. The other girl, again, I only watched two episodes. She apparently got into some sort of a brawl that she has to stay clean for 3 years or they'll open up all her other pending cases. These kids are just fucking straight troublemakers. They don't know the English language at all. They're an insult to fucking Italians. They overemphasize the how we pronounce words and how we talk and how we dress and how we look. But if you thought Jersey Shore was bad and portrayed Italians in a negative light, this is 10 times worse. It's called Made in Staten Island. Staten Island is a fucking shithole. I've been there. I don't know why it's even considered one of the boroughs in fucking New York. Like, I don't know how they even recognize it as a fucking place on a map. And that's where they're all living. And they all fucking, their parents are all either in jail or they're on drugs or they're dressed like whores because they all are. Like, the moms, like their boobs are out and shit. And the daughters act the same way. It is insulting to Italians, but something that you have to see maybe once or twice and be like, thank God I'm not like that if I'm Italian. Or thank God if I grew up in an inner city, I didn't turn out like that. Or somebody like me whose dad did time, I didn't turn out like that. I watch that show because I'm appreciative of the life and how I made something of my life. And I'm not like these little fucks. Because I would slap the shit out of all these little fucking kids. Made in Staten Island. I don't know how long it's going to last. You want to watch a bunch of second generation fucking rats and whores and fucking punks and attempted murderers playing up the Italian accent thinking that they're tough guys? Go watch that. You'll be insulted and you'll feel dirty and feel bad for them. So Made in Staten Island was the last show I watched. So there it is. All my shows on Netflix, all the reality shows that I end up watching on MTV, all my documentaries I watched on Netflix. Some I recommended, most of them I did, some I enjoyed, some I'm continuing to watch, some I'm not. Some I watch for you so you don't have to fucking burn your eyes and be like, what the fuck did I just watch? But that was it. I did that nonstop being sick. I'd never watched so much television in my life. I'm glad I got to do it. It was a good time to, much as I was coughing and feeling like shit, it was good to be away from the office. It was good to not be writing or doing the podcast. It was good to not actually be eating my meals or going to the gym, being on the routine. It was a little break. And I don't do that like a lot of other people do. I don't come home from work and sit on the fucking couch and watch TV for hours and throw down a fucking case of beer. That's not who I am. But to veg out and watch all that shit over the course of that week, it felt pretty fucking good. So hopefully all these reviews did something for you. Maybe you're going to be encouraged to go watch something. It's up to you. Let me know what you think. You can reach out to me on all the social media, starting on Instagram. The T Podcast, that's the podcast account. All the podcast-related shit goes up there. My quotes from the shows, my memes. That's the _T_podcast. And then this T-blog, T-B-L-A-W-G, for all my cool pitches, my travel adventures, and everything that I've done. Hit me up, DM me, like the pitches, give me a follow. On Twitter, T-blog, all one word. Email me. Email me if you want opinions on other shows or saying, T, you're out of your fucking mind. I love Made in Staten Island. It is the greatest reality show of all time. Then I'll argue with you on a fucking email because I do argue with people sometimes. That is T@T-blog.com. The Facebook page, the T-blog page, I'm on there occasionally. And of course, here on iTunes in the place that started it all, T-blog.com for my podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. That's it. That was a lot of information. I didn't think I was going to go almost 30 minutes, but I did. Woof. And I'm surprised my voice didn't cut out. But that's it. That's the end of the podcast. That's the end of January. Bring on February. Bring it all on. Let it snow. Let it fucking snow. Bring on the Super Bowl. All right, everyone. You know how I do this. You know how I close it out. Until next time, always take it there. Talk about anything. Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a renegade. Never been afraid to holler about anything.